This is a Defocus Media production.
This is Dr. Maria Sampalis, and welcome to Corporate Optometry Nation podcast, where we interview eye care professionals in corporate optometry and take a different approach to a business aspects of optometry. Hey, Corporate Optometry Nation, this is Dr. Maria Sampalis. Today we're interviewing Dr. Curtis Ono. He's with the AOA, and we want to talk about why the AOA is so important and that everybody should join. He's the chair, Affiliate Relations and Membership Executive Committee, Membership Development Committee. He's led and developed the membership retention and recruiting efforts for many years. He's been a past president for the Great Western Council of Optometry. Welcome, Dr. Ono, and can you give us some more information about where you practice and what else you've done for the profession of optometry?
Yeah, thanks, Maria. I appreciate this opportunity. I practice here in Seattle and Bellevue, Washington, so up at the Great Northwest, which is typical weather right now, which is really rainy. I own a practice with a pediatric ophthalmologist, and we've been in partnership for the last 20 years. I made my 20th year this last year. And then we also employ three very eager, very talented associate optometrists, all three of them. I have also served as president of the Optometric Physicians of Washington here in Washington State. And I've been not only on membership, but I've also been pretty active in the legislative arena too, both here in Washington State, but also where I started my roots, which was in Minnesota back in the North Central States.
Yeah, we thank you for your volunteering your time and helping move optometry forward. So I think joining the AOA, every optometrist should join the AOA. A lot of doctors have said that by joining the AOA, it's like insurance to continue to practice in the future, to continue scope, and all these outside factors that, you know, telemedicine, online realtors, and other things that are disrupting our industry, and it's not good for patient care. I think the AOA is the only thing out there right now that can really help our profession and continue to make our profession evolve and grow. Can you give us an overview of the membership categories in the AOA and why doctors should join?
Yeah, we're a pretty diverse group, and we are becoming more and more diverse, those of us in the optometric eye care. So we're over 44,000 members nationwide. We are active members, and this does include a partial practice category as well as a full-time practice category. We have retired, lifetime. We have an educator class as well. Also students through the AOSA. We also have a public member category for those that are public members that are not optometrists, as well as an international membership category as well. We are a coalition, as you all might be aware of 53 affiliates. And then people will say, I think there's only 50 states, but it does include 50 states. It also includes Washington, D.C. as their separate affiliate, the Armed Forces Optometric Society, and the American Optometric Student Association. Those are also affiliates making it 53.
Can you give us an overview of the structure?
Yeah, well, you know, we're also, the structure is basically that the AOA is a national organization to be able to do national work. And we're not only talking about supplying member benefits, which is first and foremost, always in my mind, to see if we're meeting and making sure that we're meeting the needs of the practitioner out there, but also the advocacy arena too. And this is in the federal area that the AOA is especially active in, not only for legislative, but insurances as well. And I think most importantly, what the affiliates feel is most important is supplying the resources and the knowledge and the venue for best practice sharing for states to be able to effectively advocate for their profession in their individual states or affiliates, which is very important. It's pretty much the same thing that goes on both at the national level, but also in each of the states. Sharing this information, for instance, language on proposed bills, is so important to be able to be part of that network.
So the AOA works at the federal level for, managed care plans. There's been some wins with managed care. The way that they're structuring online telemedicine, making, you know, legal practices in optometry. How about the, you know, with the college with National Vision? I think that was an AOA intervention as well. That was an uprise in the optometry community, and both parties decided to dissolve that partnership. Can you give us some information on all that stuff that doctors are talking about that are concerned about the future of optometry and how AOA at the federal level has affected it and has trickled down also to, you know, the local states as well?
Yeah. The most recent thing, as you were just going over, is naming of an optometry school by a commercial entity. And that just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right to have a commercial entity be have a name attached to an optometry school. We believe in quality education, but also unbiased education as well. That was particularly important for the AOA, but it was not only important for the AOA, but it was important for the students. Not only at the students at that particular school, but the students at the other 22 optometry schools within the nation really strongly felt and really advocated for the AOA to be able to voice an opinion about not having a commercial entity be connected with the School of Optometry. It's education, quality education that they're providing. It's state-of-the-art education. And we certainly do not want any commercial entity to be influencing our future colleagues out there. You had mentioned other things that's happening within the AOA realm. The Doc Access is one of them. That is in collaboration with the American Dental Association. And basically, it has a dentistry and optometry as a common thread of not wanting to, just because you belong to a plan, a third-party payer plan, that you have to and you're mandated to take all the insurance plans that it offers. The example, of course, is that more and more medical plans are also offering vision plans as well. And we know that there's stipulations within insurances that if you want to belong to the medical plan, you also have to belong to the vision plan. You know, I had gone over and mentioned that we have a whole plethora of different practice models and styles. We're a very diverse community. And if this happens, and consequently, people who are involved only in medical care, and we know those that are part of glaucoma practices and retinal practices and co-management practices, that they feel concerned that they cannot be part of that plan. Also, the Doc Access Bill also eliminates the mandate giving discounts to non-covered benefits. Non-covered benefits are something that the vision or medical plan does not cover, but yet they mandate that we give a subscriber a discount. The dentists give an example of teeth whitening, for instance, that it might not be a covered benefit under their plan, but yet when they sign up for a third-party insurance plan to be a provider for, they're mandated to give a certain discount on that. And we can certainly, within our own community and our own profession, think of examples that insurance companies will mandate a discount even though it's not a benefit.
Yeah, I think vision managed care plans have really affected the industry, have really affected the way optometrists practice. Choose to be self-independent. I'm very pro being self-independent. If optometrist wants to be employed, that's fine. But I think for the health of the profession, to be able to have your own business, to be able to practice the way you want in any setting is important. And I've managed care plans have kind of discouraged some doctors and students to go in that aspect and to self-employment. So I think that's great that the AOA has taken charge of what doctors are concerned about, being able to get some wins, because those wins have been very positive with the optometry school, managed care, even with telemedicine. Can you give us some information on what the AOA is doing with telemedicine?
Yeah, it's very, very timely, especially when we're talking about quality of care. We're thinking about quality of education. Certainly with schools of optometry, we're talking about quality and access to our patients with many of the things that Doc Access in collaboration with the dentist also wants to accomplish, but telemedicine also. Telemedicine, AOA is not against technology. Technology is such an important part of all of our lives. And we know that we utilize it both in our personal and our professional life all the time, especially when it has to do with immediate care and access to this care. What AOA wants to be careful about, and the affiliates, is that we're providing a high level of care. And we can certainly think of examples of telemedicine where it may be difficult. That face-to-face interaction, as we all know as providers, is so key and so important to be able to provide the highest quality of care. As I indicated, I co-own a practice with a pediatric ophthalmologist, and I just can't see doing a examination where observation is so important with pediatrics that we have everything being done with telemedicine, especially talking about refractions and online refractions, where, as we know with pediatrics, it's very easy to miss a significantly large refractive error if you don't cycle please that particular patient. And it certainly saved my, if you pardon my word, but several times when I have cycle pleased and discovered that they had a high level of refraction and or an astigmatropia or a refractive amblyopia case or etc. Those infants especially are very fleeting. So again, AOA is not anti-technology. We all use it. In fact, I think I just had a discussion with a group of optometrists where we are becoming very tech heavy in our practices. We're relying on the latest technology to provide the best care, but we need to do it carefully. We need to have a voice within eye care to be able to voice our opinion about how to provide the best level of care and the highest level of care in a telemedicine format. We are certainly comfortable with it on a face-to-face basis, but also, again, that telemedicine side is such an important ingredient that we as optometrists really need to have someone at the table in order to voice our opinions.
That's right. We need to voice the opinions of our optometrists. And you know, telemedicine is one of those things that, you know, will evolve, will change optometry, but we need to be there to enforce what is good for patient care and what is good for our profession as well. So I think that's important, and I'm happy that the AOA has taken a stance on it and what is out there.
And many of the state affiliates too, you know, many of these things are legislated at the state level, and the state and the affiliates realize how important it is to provide the highest level of care to their citizens in their particular region. And the states are really the ones also that are actively out there fighting on behalf of the patients and providing the best care to them.
So each state has different laws on telemedicine. How does that work? And how is that? Are they also working with the AOA at the federal level? I feel that, you know, each state's a little different on what they perceive as telemedicine and what laws are. So, and what's legal and what's not illegal in some states. And how will the other states catch up on certain things that certain telemedicines, just refraction online, is acceptable at this point? Why have some states lagged behind?
Well, you know, there's different dynamics for every state, and they're not only in the political arena, but also in the grassroots level too. States have to activate the members and the optometrists in their state in order to be truly effective in the area of advocacy. You know, this is where I think all will agree that optometry is particularly strong. It's almost in our DNA to be advocates legislatively for our profession and for our patients first and foremost. So there are several ways, and I think the most important way is what I had mentioned, and that is to learn from each other. We go through battles, we go through these legislative fights and battles, and some are successful and some are not successful. But if we learn from each other about where the pitfalls are, for instance, in some of the language that may be crafted for a particular, particular point in an area of advocacy, then I think that that's important. The AOA has a committee. It's called the State Governmental Relations Committee, or SGRC. And those are made up of talented, advocacy-minded members, and they share that information. Their job is to be able to not only share what works, but also to review language legislative language and point out where a state may have problems or where it might be misconstrued or what type of arguments you would want to use for this particular point. And again, when you look over the last 50 years in optometry, this is really where optometry is particularly strong, is being able to advocate for its patients and the quality of care. So I think that's the first thing. I think it's to communicate with one another between state borders. Each state is a little different politically, but at the same time, the education of all of us is the same. And then the AOA is there in order to be able to supply venues or to have venues set up where we can talk about advocacy and where we should be going and how should we do it, but also supply the resources to be able to do that as well, in particular feedback as well as recommendations and what's going to be the most effective.
So I think corporate optometry has a lot of, corporate optometry should join the AOA. I think there's a lot of obstacles that come in front of them that are, you know, specific to corporate optometrists. If corporate optometrists wanted to get involved, how would they get involved at the state level, at the federal level, and how would they be able to join as well?
Well, joining is easy. It's either done through the affiliate that the person either resides in or their practice model is part of. I give that example for the Armed Forces Society. If you have a federal paycheck, if you receive a federal paycheck, you are qualified to join AFOS or the Armed Forces Optometric Society, which is more than just the Armed Forces. It's also the VA. It's also Indian Health Services, for instance, as well. Also, we have an online join method through the AOA.org website. It's AOA.org/united. And United stands for United in Possibilities. That's our campaign that we've been running for the last, seems like decades, but it's actually been 2 to 3 years, where we really want to message the benefits of belonging to the AOA, and also the personal stories that come out of being a member and why a person is a member. I think that's particularly important as well. So either through your affiliate, your state affiliate, or the AFOS, or you can go right to the AOA.org website to join immediately. To be involved, you know, all you have to do is say that you want to be involved. And I have, you know, I have never seen a case where somebody who says that they want to get involved in a certain area that they aren't involved in either the state. Regional. I was just the past president of the Great Western Council of Optometry, which is made up of 13 Western states of AOA affiliates. So regionally, there's an opportunity as well as nationally through the AOA. But just send a note that you want to be involved, and you can be involved in any way that you can. What we've been trying to do at the AOA in order to be able to have an active membership is it's not only about serving on boards and sit and attending board meetings. It's also belonging to committees, and it's also micro tasks. There are tasks that states, regional organizations, as well as national organizations always need, whether it be a project group or whether it be editing a newsletter or whether it be interviewing someone like you're doing with me, Maria. All of those things are opportunities if you have a fairly tight schedule. There's opportunities to be involved and represent your association.
So what about ODs that would say, I want to join, but I feel that, you know, I'm part-time and membership right now doesn't fit within my budget with, you know, student loans and, you know, family. How can they get involved as well? Because I just say sometimes, you know, even if you just make a phone call to your local state rep, that's important. Volunteering your time, doing things to help. There's a lot of ODs that volunteer a lot of their time for the profession of optometry. What can other doctors do to get involved and then in the future, you know, also contribute? Because in it's a legislative profession, optometry. They need money to get these things across, but it's also relationships at the state level with your senators and legislative people. You can make a big difference if you have a relationship. If that person can make a difference in your state is a patient of yours, let them know, right? I mean, what can a doctor do outside the box to really help and move optometry forward?
You know, I think you're right. It's being active in the legislative arena in a grassroots area. You know, when you know a legislator either because they're patients or you volunteered for their campaign, that's a foot in the door. Mm-hmm. And the foot in the door is particularly important when there are things that come up that's going to affect optometry, both in a positive way, but also in a negative way too, because many of the advocacy efforts that AOA as well as the affiliates do is defensive. In other words, not losing ground from what we already have. As I mentioned before too, you can have also a partial practice do Schedule 2. And partial practice is someone who doesn't work full time and the dues are less. And that's not only less from the affiliate level, but also it's proportionate less for the AOA level too. So we realize that our profession is again diverse. We are in all stages of career. And there are people who are from both ends, beginning a career, beginning a family, also ending a career, who are partial practice. And we wanted to recognize that by having a partial practice due schedule. And then we feel that it's affordable. One thing that is a statistic, and this just illustrates the value of networking and being involved with your association, but also meeting of others who are in your same profession and learning from each other, both professionally and personally. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, AOA members on average do make more than a non-member. It's 7% is our recent statistic. And, you know, I'm not saying that the AOA member is any better than anybody else, but they are people who have contact with one another and with their colleagues through different venues, and we learn from each other. You know, we're in a unique profession. We go to very similar programs, all of us have, and we all want each other to succeed. We're not in a profession to see people go belly up. We want each other to succeed and their patients in our communities and our respective communities to receive the best care. And I think that's unique. I think that's unique about our profession and about our association membership too, that we do want to help each other out. So by being connected, I think you can, they say, work smarter, not harder necessarily. And so I've certainly learned a tremendous amount from my colleagues and being able to do things more efficiently. Not that I'm the most efficient person in the world. I still have a lot to learn, but I learn things at each meeting, my fellow optometrists.
Yeah, I think the AOA has, besides legislative, is good for networking, mentorship, practice management. And I think that camaraderie is what helps. And you have the student association as well, and you kind of build up the future leaders of optometry. I think that is great as well, because it's all for a common purpose to keep the profession going. And it is, like you said, a defensive profession.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been to Washington for the legislative day. I think that's a great way to kind of get your feet wet and learn from seasoned professionals. I've been to the AOA meeting, optometry meeting. That's a great meeting, you know, for education, for vendor discounts, and just meeting people. It's also very good as well. So I think the AOA has a lot of different factors that a lot of other organizations don't have, and has had a lot of wins recently for our profession. And I think it's great motivation to have younger ODs involved and just get other doctors to volunteer and even just help with legislative funding if they're able to. Even just a little amount helps for advocacy as well. So I think that's important. I just want to touch on one last thing. I think if you can tell us on how the AOA helped Oklahoma, you know, secure its bill there, because I think that will probably come up again, probably show up in other states. And I think that was a win for optometry as well, because it was on scope of practice, was my understanding. Are you able to give us some insight on that?
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with Oklahoma, honestly, okay, and the details about Oklahoma. I know that they have been traditionally been very active legislatively. Certainly their scope of practice illustrates that, and the ability to be able to use lasers therapeutically, but I do not know much about their bill, unfortunately. Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. But I mean, just that state has lasers and things like that. Have they because at the state level, have they've been so proactive? At the federal level, has that also impacted optometry as well as trying to show an example to be able to promote it in other states? Because they're saying about access of care with telemedicine, which is great to give access of care to patients that, you know, they're in a remote area. But something like this as well is also great for patient care because they don't have to go a long time to drive to see someone else as well.
Yeah, I think one thing that always happens when a affiliate or a state gets into new territory with optometry, it always is something that everybody, both at the national level and the other affiliates too, take notice and want to learn from them. You know, it's sort of like we all want to kneel at their feet and be able to just learn and know what happened. And just psychologically, the ability, knowing that there is the ability to be able to include lasers within scope of practice too. We've always talked about it for several years. They've had it up for several years, but we've always talked about it. But to have a state being able to actually have that is just, you know, wonderful. And to be able to have two or three other states also have that be within their grasp is just amazing. But they've all gotten there a little differently, which I think is always very interesting too, a very interesting study of advocacy. So psychologically, it also means a lot that if a state has broken through a certain, into a certain area, it means that we also have the ability in other states to be able to do that, learning from each other, building up enthusiasm, building up that grassroots network, all important ingredients in the area of effective advocacy.
Yeah, I think the AOA in the last year has really done a lot to promote our profession. I think it's proven to a lot of optometrists that they are out there to help grow our profession and really, you know, all the other things that a lot of doctors in the group complained about kind of, you know, shut that down to say, look, the AOA is out there. We're going right at the problems and facing them head on, and we're going to beat it. We're going to win because this is a struggle, and we need more optometrists to join the AOA and volunteer time and just help with legislative efforts. Everybody is welcome to join. And for me, I've been a member for almost 11 years now since I got out of school, and I think it's very important. I'm, you know, help as much as I can Rhode Island and Massachusetts, where Massachusetts has its glaucoma. We're still struggling on that as well, but you know, have a lot of support from our colleagues all over the country. So each state has its own struggles, but together, I think for the common purpose to help our patients and grow our profession is important. So I want to thank you, Dr. Curtis Ono, for taking the time to be on the podcast today. And hopefully we can get some more docs to join the AOA and volunteer time and be involved, because I think it's very important to be involved in. Even if they just want to go to the optometry meeting to check it out and talk to different people and get some education, have some fun. Do you know where the next meeting will be this year?
The next one in 2019 will be in our home office city. It's going to be in St. Louis, Missouri.
Very nice. Very nice. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. Do you want to leave your contact information and email address if people have questions?
Yes, certainly. So my email is gwcowa@gmail.com. Love to be able to field questions, to be able to communicate. Before we got on this, on the podcast, Marie and I talked about the importance of communication. It truly is important in order to communicate with one another. It's also important, as Maria, as you indicated, the great importance of uniting together. And we're stronger together. We're better together. And it all goes back to our campaign of United in Possibilities. We have such great possibilities for the future of optometry if we stand united.
I agree. And Curtis, if somebody wanted to, you know, state an issue to the AOA, is it anonymous, or how can someone state a complaint to the AOA?
Certainly. There are multiple ways. On the AOA website, actually, you can actually put in information, a comment, or and then send it to us. We feel those questions every day or those requests every day, or certainly you can send it to me. And if you indicate that you want to have things be confidential, you know, that's fine too. All we want to do is be better. We want to listen to various groups out there, as well as prospective members and members, because we want to be better. We want to be an association that's relevant and is providing not only relevant benefits to all of you, but that we're doing work on your behalf that's relevant and current and important.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Thank you all.